open from 11 to 8 daily, serving Mexican cuisine. Dinner provided by De Nicola's. Located at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard, De Nicola's Authentic Italian Restaurant has been a Portland institution for over 40 years. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and the time is 5:59 with 15 seconds to go until the top of the hour. Coming up next on this News in PA Day, a continuation where we will be speaking for the next 2 hours about lessons learned from Antifa from Germany. Yes, folks, we live in a time when we need that kind of advice. So stay tuned to KBOO Portland here on 90.7 FM during our fall membership drive. That's a perfect time to give us a call. Become a member today, 877-500-5266.
Lessons from German Anti-Fascist Movements was recorded at Cider Riot on Saturday, September 8th. 2018. This series of events, put on by RASH Northwest, African and Native Solidarity PDX, Pacific Northwest Anti-Fascist Workers Collective, and Rose City Antifa, functions as public education from perspectives outside the United States on the rise of fascist movements and parties internationally. In order to successfully intervene and stop fascism from spreading, it is useful to take a look at the different experiences built from movements in other countries. The speech by Linda and Miro focuses on the anti-fascist movement in Germany and the three major strategies, struggles, and theories of the German anti-fascist movement from 1932 to the present. We'll start this with Donica, one of the hosts of the event.
I'm Donica. I'm with African Indigenous Solidarity and PNW. I'm going to introduce myself in my language, and then I'm going to share with you what land you're on and a little bit about the people who are the original people of this land and welcome you formally. Halato Achichi Okshulubonghitilifishnik. I'm Donica. I'm Choctaw. We're originally from Mississippi, and then we were relocated to what's now known as Oklahoma and what is commonly referred to as the Trail of Tears. So I'm also a guest here in the Pacific Northwest. Portland, what is known as Portland, the occupied territory of Portland, Oregon, is actually unceded land. There were lots of people that came and went to this place because there's two primary waterways. There's the Big River, which is unfortunately named after Christopher Columbus, called the Columbia River. And then there's the Willamette River. And because of that, there were lots of people that came to this place. Native people from this land traded with people all the way from Russia. We have all those kinds of stories and knowledge. The last people that lived here were the Chinook. Particularly, there's a band of Chinook called the Multnomah Chinook. The Chinook natives are currently still here, but they're not recognized by the federal government. There's a few thousand of them left, and they live just up the Big River, up in the gorge, and they're fighting for sovereignty to this day. And so I wanted to share that with you. We are guests here. Even I, as an Indigenous person, I'm a guest here. And so we just want to acknowledge those people, that they're still in struggle, they're still fighting for their land and their sovereignty, and they're beautiful people. The other thing is that I want to acknowledge is that we're practicing a tradition that has been going on in this place since time immemorial, where we gather, we share knowledge. I always like to say that because I think it's really important that we share knowledge, especially when we're trying to fight imperialism and white supremacy and fascism, that we're sharing knowledge with you and that you're sharing with us, and that's a tradition that's been honored here since time immemorial. And so I welcome you to this place in the best way that I can, and that I'm really grateful that you're here, and I'm grateful that everybody is in this room, and that we open up our hearts and our minds to have a really good discussion about how that we can continue the struggle against imperialism, white supremacy, and fascism in this country and globally. With that said, I'm just going to leave the stage to our guests. who came all the way from Germany, and we are glad you're here safe, and we hope that you get home safely as well.
Yeah, thank you so much. So welcome. First and foremost, I want to thank everyone who organized this. So the African and Native Solidarity, the Pacific Northwest Anti-Fascist Workers, Rose City Antifa, and Rash Northwest. Thank you so much, and everyone else who helped with this. We're really, really happy to be here. I am Linda, and this is Miro. Miro is organized with a group called Radical M that exists since 2004 and is a predecessor of the somewhat famous Autonoma Antifa M. Maybe you've heard of them. And I'm in a group called Top Berlin, which stands for Theory, Organization, and Action, which is around since 2006, and you've probably all heard of Berlin, I think. These groups are part of the Jungs Ganze Alliance, which is an anti-authoritarian, communist, anti-fascist organization with groups from all over Germany and one from Austria. And then there's another network that I want to present to you real quick, which is the Beyond Europe Network, which we are a part of too. There are groups in it from all over Europe, for example, from Greece or from the UK or Czech Republic. Why talk about the history of Antifa? So we think that every tactic to fight fascism you can think of and you can't think of, for that matter, has already been tried sometime somewhere. So we don't have to think of everything ourselves. We can learn from the experiences of our comrades and learn from their victories and also their failures. We're aware that we're not able to like tell you the story of the German Antifa movement, as there are so much interesting topics that we could talk about. So what we are trying to present to you are the major strategies and struggles, theories and splits, while at the same time being very aware of the fact that others might have chosen a different angle on it. So when it comes to translation, sometimes it wasn't easy to find translations to the German terms, so what we were doing was we chose literal translations, and we will start previous to World War II. We won't talk about the resistance during the National Socialist regime, since the conditions for anti-fascists back then were so different from what they are today. So we can't really use most of it for what we are doing right now. And more importantly, we don't want to belittle their suffering and sacrifice by rushing through it in like 10 minutes or so. This should be an extra talk, so we will leave it out. Then we finish with the current challenges and the new right. So yeah, we will go all along until today. Miro will start.
Previous to World War II, when in 1922 the fascists took power in Italy, the term fascism became a thing that people discussed, because the fascists basically destroyed or tried to destroy the organized working class, the whole left in Italy. So the left all over the world began to discuss, is fascism going to be a thing for us? Is it going to be a problem? Everywhere leftists started to try to explain what fascism is and how to fight it. And in Germany, which had the largest organized working class at the time in the world, many expected the next socialist revolution to take place there. The left was split into two major fractions. One would be the Social Democratic Party, the SPD, and the other major fraction would be the communists in the Communist Party, KPD. There was a huge divide between those parties, and they hated each other's guts for reasons I cannot get into, but the Social Democrats were involved in killing the leaders of the Communist Party and stuff like that, so it was pretty tense. So they both came up with different analysis of what fascism is and how to fight it. The KPD took their analysis of fascism from the communist theorist Georgi Dimitrov. Dimitrov says, fascism is the open terrorist dictatorship of the most reactionary, most chauvinistic, and most imperialist elements of finance capital. So to Dimitrov, fascism is not a mass movement, but is something that is installed by the elites, by a financial capital. So by definition, the KPD thought the social democrats and their pro-capitalist policies would be the embodiment of fascism and came up with the term social fascism and started calling the social democrats the true fascists, and their anti-fascist struggle was continuing fighting the Social Democratic Party. And they kept this analysis in place until 1935, so 2 years after the fascists took power and banned the Social Democratic Party, they still thought the major enemy would be the Social Democratic Party.
You are listening to Miro, an anti-fascist organizer from Berlin who spoke Saturday, September 8th in Portland. Please support KBOO and our ability to bring you this kind of content by calling right now, 877-500-5266.
That is the number, 877-500-5266. Here we are at the last couple hours of our News and Public Affairs Day special, and it has been a wonderful day. We have heard from many, many listeners who have called, who have emailed, who have joined us online. Right now, it's your turn. We're asking you to help us fight fascism. You know, this is a serious problem. I have been guilty in the past. I admit, I have been guilty in the past. In the 90s, when somebody said something to me that seemed a little conservative, I may very well have said 20 years ago, oh yeah, don't be a fascist. But now, damn, I never really expected actual fascism to rear its ugly head again, right? I thought we defeated that monster, and we have not. But it is really so important. It is crucial. It is critical for us to pull together right now and to say, no, this is where it stops. We are going to fight, and we need to learn lessons from each other. And that's why I'm so very excited about this last 2 hours of our News and Public Affairs Day, the learning lessons from the German anti-fascist movements. This is a lecture recorded just earlier this week. And so it's very fresh. This is new information, and you are getting it via your community resource, KBOO. Please call right now and support this effort. 877-500-5266. It is only with you that we can do anything. You are our listeners. You are our grassroots support. It is critical that you become involved with your community radio station right now by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Ani. I've been with you for a while now today, and it is a thing that I really feel the need to do, because in fact I realize how important KBOO is as we claim the airwaves together, as we amplify our voices, as we learn from each other, as we share information from each other's struggles. We grow stronger together, and we can fight the fascists together. So please do this thing. Call right now with your pledge of support to KBOO. Become a member right now, and $10 a month or $120 all at once, however you choose to do it, we would love to thank you with this exclusive Fight the Fascist Power Pack. This is a USB drive that has an internet security toolkit. It also has over 40 hours of KBOO podcasts and program specials, including my interview with Alexander Reed Ross and Shane Burley from last April, and a couple of programs I've done recently with Rose City Antifa. So please call right now, and it has many other hosts as well, but this is a topic that really should be near and dear to all of our hearts. There is something for us all to do. We all have a part to play in fighting back fascism, and right now I'm asking you to do this one important thing, that is calling KBOO Community Radio right now and becoming a member. Add your strength to the rest of the community and call 877-500-5266.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Cotton Cloud Natural Beds and Furniture, women-owned since 1981, providing sustainable wood furniture, locally handcrafted futons, latex mattresses, and more, using organic and natural materials. The Cotton Cloud showroom is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland, online at cottoncloudfutons.com.
This is Miro talking about the factionalization of the anti-fascist left before World War II. we go back to him talking about the analysis of what fascism is by the Social Democrats.
The Social Democrats, of course, came up with a different analysis because they wouldn't join in an analysis where there are the true fascists. They came up with a term called red fascism and said that the communists would be the true fascists since they were against democracy. So the Social Democrats continued fighting the communists and called it anti-fascism, which of course wasn't really effective against the true fascists. In 1932, the Nazis in Germany already had a mass base and mass membership, and they grew stronger and stronger, tried to control the streets, gain ground in working class neighborhoods, and so on. And so the leadership of the Communist Party realized that this is going to be a problem for them and that they need to take this on. For example, they also lost a lot of communist members to the fascists. So the Communist Party called for the Antifaschistische Aktion, the anti-fascist action. There's two red flags in it. The logo, each of those flags symbolizes one of the major organizations of the working class. So one red flag for the Social Democratic Party, the other one for the Communist Party. So it's meant to show unity. And the wind is blowing from the left, so it's meant to be really offensive. So now we're going to push them back. And they chose a circle around it that symbolizes a rescue ring like you have on ships. So it's meant to rescue the working class from fascism. And they invited the rank and file members of the Social Democratic Party to join and push back the fascists together. But they still kept the analysis in place that the Social Democrats are the true social fascists. So it didn't really work to invite the Social Democrats, and the leadership of the party banned their members from joining. So the unity part didn't really work. But still, locally, a lot of anti-fascists from different fractions worked together and build up anti-fascist committees and stuff like that. And things really kicked off from there. In July of 1932, 100 people died in clashes with fascists. So it was a really violent time. The Social Democrats, of course, came up with their own anti-fascist organization called Iron Front. They had their own logo. You can see those three arrows. And each of those arrows stands for one struggle. So the first arrow is against monarchism, the second one is against fascism, and the third one is against communism. So it's an anti-fascist, anti-communist organization. So no one really uses this logo anymore in Germany. We saw that a lot of people here still use it, and maybe we can discuss this later because we don't really understand why. More on that later. The history of anti-fascism in Germany is a history of defeat. And this experience that the largest organized working class in the world couldn't stop the fascists is really, really important for German anti-fascism. There is this strong notion that the fascists should have been stopped while it was still possible, while they were still weak and did not have mass membership. So in Germany, there's this this phrase, "Wehret den Anfängen," which means stop them from the beginning, and that's very much around, and the anti-fascists have very much the sense that it's important to sense fascist threats early, crush them early. We want to present three major reasons why the anti-fascists before World War II failed. The first one was anti-fascism is about unity, and they were way too divided. The left did not work together. The second thing is they made analytical mistakes. The communists did not have the concepts to distinguish between bourgeois capitalist democracy and all its horrors and inadequacies and actual fascism. And so they chose their enemies wrong. We think it's very important to sit down and do a proper analysis of fascism first and not just think that theory is academic yada yada, but it's really important because you might end up fighting the wrong people. And the third thing is the left and the communists especially underestimated the mass character of fascism. And this was a huge strategic mistake because they thought that fascism was a thing of the elites. They only fought the bosses and capital. So when one of their members was killed by fascists, they organized a strike to hurt the capital and did not so much fight back against the fascists. At least the official party did that. But the masses in Germany actively shared the ideology of the fascists, so nationalism, anti-Semitism, racism, and so on. And you got to take these ideologies seriously and not just blame fascism on the capitalists. So we try to learn from this, and we think it's really important to read up on the authoritarian personality. So we try to read the Frankfurt School, because they have a lot of interesting concepts on this.
That was Miro talking about the anti-fascist left before World War II. This speech, Lessons from German Anti-Fascist Movements, was recorded Saturday, September 8th at Cider Riot.
This is important information, and you are hearing it here on KABU, your community radio station. I'm Ani, and right now is the time for your voice to be heard here at KABU. Become a member of KABU this evening. Please do give us a call right now at 877-500-5266. You are hearing voices from the panel discussion last weekend that was here, Lessons from the German Anti-Fascist Movements. We are hearing some deep history here, and it is so important. It is vital as we see what's happening around us to learn real lessons from history and then to analyze that information and to figure out how we can use that now, here, transposing it in time and in country to make sure that we can actually effectively fight fascism back now, here and today, because there is an active and growing fascist movement. We see that clearly. It stems from the White House on down and to the shock troops of Patriot Prayer, etc., the Proud Boys. And you know that we need to be strong together. This is a critical time, and you need community radio to get us through it, because it is, in fact, how we inform each other and how we keep each other together. KABU is the hub of so many communities, and right now we are asking you to be there and to contribute your financial support so that we can keep the lights on and keep the signal going so that we can continue to send 26,000 watts of power out to the northern Willamette Valley and then all around the world via KBOO.FM, our internet stream. Please contribute online at KBOO.FM. If you are listening online, contribute online. Just hit the donate button and it's quick and easy. Or just pick up the phone and call 877-500-5266. We work to get recorders into the hands of community activists so that we can get you the latest speeches and information that comes from visitors to town so that we can share this information with more people than could be present just last Saturday night, so that we can all hear this and we can grow stronger together through being informed. And it is that information, I feel, that will compel you right now to pick up the phone and wiggle your fingers over the buttons, 877-500-5266. Connect back into KABU, your community connection. And again, if you are able to give $10 a month, $120 over the course of a year, you can ask us for the Fight the Fascist Power Pack. We would love to give that to you as your thank you gift. And that way you can have a lot of KABU programs and podcasts related to this topic there on a thumb drive, as well as an internet security toolkit that includes a folder of open source software, including the Tor browser, which provides a way to browse anonymously, Veracrypt, which lets you effortlessly encrypt entire folders, and KeePass Password Manager, as well as the GPG email encryption software, and oh, so much more. It is a really powerful little USB drive, and your membership to KABU is a powerful act to take right now this evening. Please call us, join us. $10 a month. Take that leap of faith. Commit $10 a month to your community radio station. Claim the airwaves. Amplify your voice and become a member of KABU right now. 877-500-5266. We have a great time at KABU. Volunteers come in who are passionate about their communities, who want to share information or music or art or poetry. There is so much that we do down here. You hear Charity's getting very excited behind me. She is a very small dog. And you know, she also likes to come down here and have a great time. But we do this for actually a very serious purpose, and that is to keep each other informed, to keep each other up to date on what's going on in our world, in our communities, around the corner. You know, there is no issue too big or too small for us to cover, and that is because we are actually created by hundreds of community members who are working together to bring you this information. Right now, we're asking you to support that effort. and ensure that KBOO continues to be strong for the next 50 years. Give us a call at 877-500-5266, online at kboo.fm. Make sure your voice is counted. Make sure your participation is active in your community radio station as we work together to really turn the world back over, because it is topsy-turvy. There is really dire stuff happening. You know that. You listen to KBOO. So now take right action and dial 877-500-5266. Join KBOO right now.
Thank you for supporting KBOO. We go back to the lessons from German anti-fascist movements. This is Linda.
So after the war and after like all of these horrors and murder, you would think that in Germany there would be like a new beginning, that people really would take it seriously. And after the war, there was a short period of actually kicking out former Nazis of the state's apparatus. But that didn't last long. When the Cold War escalated, the Western Allies realized that they need a strong West Germany. So what they did was rebuilding the institutions with former Nazis. So in the military, in the secret service, in police, in education, and all over politics, there were former Nazis in key positions. In the late 40s, so very shortly after the war, the German population started to say that they were fed up about talking about the Holocaust. They had this narrative where they would say, we didn't do it, it was just a few Nazis, we need to move on with this. So there was no reflection and only a few consequences for a few people. This neglect to crush Nazism in Germany is the basis of future generations of fascists up till today. For anti-fascists back then, after the war, there was no anti-fascist unity in Germany, as, for example, in other countries. So our grandparents actually were Nazis, when yours maybe have fought fascism. So for the anti-fascists back then, being against fascism in Germany didn't mean being on the side of the people fighting fascism, but rather being very critical of all the people in Germany. And we think that this is a major difference in that time in contrast to other countries. So anti-fascists at that time were mostly communist. So in the 60s then, there was the first generation after the war, and they all wondered what their parents were doing during National Socialism, as no one was really talking about this. So in their collective experience, their parents did or at least tolerated fascism and benefited from it as well. So the rebellion of 68 in Germany had a very much anti-fascist connotation. The result of this was that those young people, they really wanted to do it differently. They said, we can't look away and can't tolerate fascism anywhere. And that was the point where the New Left in Germany started, and they had this motto, which was that they didn't trust the older generation at all. And you have the saying there, maybe some of you will know it. They said, do not trust anyone over 30. So then in the 70s, the movement of the New Left split up into three fractions. And we will only talk about one fraction, which are the K groups, because they are very important for anti-fascist history in Germany. So the K groups, they were like dogmatic Maoist parties. They mostly were students who still fought for the working class. So they weren't fighting for themselves and their environment, but they wanted to organize the working class. They had military-like structures, and they ordered people a lot. So for example, there was one K group which ordered their people to have a certain hairstyle because that will appeal to the working class more. So everyone had the same hairstyle in this group. Yeah, and then maybe another example for that dogmatism. One group split up because they argued how to distribute the grain supplies after the revolution. So there was a thing. So in the K group's view, there was the socialist world revolution was still very imminent, and they had reasons for that. So what they did was very much focus on the working class. They thought that if there would come a crisis, this crisis would lead to a socialist world revolution. There was only one organization that had a different take on that, because they had a different analysis. They said that fascism is still very much a threat in Germany, and they started modern day anti-fascist organizing. This group was called the KB, which stands for Communist Association, and they had 2,500 members at that time, which was considered small back then. They thought if there was another crisis, people in Germany would rather reestablish a Nazi regime than take a part in a socialist revolution. So they really, really had a focus on fighting fascism. And they started with research, which is still done today and still very important. So what they did was finding out who the fascists were, how their structures worked, where their infrastructure was, and how they got their money. That's the basis for modern day anti-fascist organizing.
In the 80s, things changed. People did not believe anymore that a socialist revolution was imminent, but a lot of people on the left thought that the revolution is not coming. So the whole left basically retreated, or major parts of the left retreated into sub and alternative culture. So punk came around, for example, with its no future attitude. So it was more of a depressive time. And the new movements in Germany were not concerned with a world revolution anymore, but rather with one topic. So there was a huge anti-war movement, or a huge movement against nuclear power, and so on. And in the 80s, the Nazis again got stronger in Germany. They recruited heavily in skinhead subculture, and that worked kind of well for them. They did not only get more recruits, but there were also some very high-level attacks of fascists. For example, in 1980, there was a bombing at Oktoberfest that killed 13 people and injured 211 people, and it was done by a Nazi. There was also one new movement in the radical left, and it was called the so-called Autonome, which are autonomous anarchists, basically. And they tried to learn from the mistakes and experiences of the K groups. So they said, we don't want to fight on behalf of the working class anymore, but we want to fight for ourselves. So it was a very individualist approach to politics. They did not build any kinds of organizations. They tried to abolish hierarchies. They did not have like these orders. But their organization was rather a network of social relations, and people organized around like squads or one topic and did a meeting and then would just leave and go to another meeting with another campaign. So it was really a fluid structure. They had a very much moral approach to politics. So they thought, okay, what do I think is wrong? And then fight it. Mostly fight it very militant. So they were often very clandestine and did militant attacks on stuff. And that worked quite well because they did not have like this organization with a spokesperson and a name and an address. When you are very militant, you can't have these kinds of organizations. You have to have like these more fluid structures, so that fit what they did. But still, it wasn't politically too effective because they did not have a strategy, they did not have a coherent theory, and there was no continuity in their organizing because people would just join in or leave the movement, know-how was not passed on and stuff like that. And it was really hard to join it, so you couldn't just sign up. You had to know the right people, be part of the right subculture, and so on. So they did not talk to the press or agitate in another way. These autonomous structures are still around, but nowadays they are much weaker than they were in the 80s. Some of these autonome realized that the fascists are going to be a problem and started applying their tactics to anti-fascism. And so anti-fascism in the 80s is mostly what we call search and destroy anti-fascism. So they learned how to do research from the KB, this K group, and found out where the fascists meet and where the infrastructure was and who were the bosses, and then started attacking it, like doxing or burning down their infrastructure and stuff like that, or beating up their leaders. And this was really effective in the beginning for obvious reasons, because if you burn down fascist infrastructure, it's not around anymore. But those anti-fascists were confronted with things like, hey, if you are violent, you're just as bad as the Nazis, and maybe you have heard these kinds of things yourself. So the anti-fascists in the 80s did a lot of reflection on militancy. And they said, or what they came up with was, Nazis, to them, violence is essential to their worldview, and the extermination of people is their political aim. So they think violence is good, important, and should be part of every man's personality. On the other hand, the anti-fascists thought that violence is inherently bad, it's not good or fun, and it needs to be reflected upon. But since you cannot rely on the police, and in the 80s anti-fascists often made this experience that the police would not help them, that the police would, even when they were present, not protect them, but look away during fascist attacks, that the police would work together with the fascists, pass on names and stuff like that. So they knew that they couldn't rely on the police, and anti-fascism was about self-defense. And as the anti-fascists pretty quickly learned that militancy was really effective against the fascists. So that they were only growing when they did not meet any kind of resistance, and when they met resistance, then they often dissolved pretty quickly. So anti-fascists thought violence is unfortunately necessary to stop the fascists from reaching their aim of mass murder. So if you think about it, last time the fascists were in power in Germany, they didn't go away because there were petitions, but because of tanks and bombs and stuff like that. But the anti-fascists in the 80s, they set moral boundaries to their violence. So anti-fascists in Germany mostly consented on not killing fascists. And so they did not carry knives or baseball bats or stuff you could easily kill a person with, because they said, we don't do that, and so we don't need those kinds of weapons, even when they were confronted with deadly violence because the fascists carried knives. The anti-fascists said, we are gladly cowards. We do not fight for honor or something like that. We fight to stop Nazis. We fight to win. So anti-fascists did not feel bad when they attacked 10-1 or something like that. And one organizer summarized it in an interview. He said, unlike hooligans, we do not work process-oriented, but we rather work result-oriented.
This speech, Lessons from German Anti-Fascist Movements, was recorded Saturday, September 8th at Cider Riot. Thanks to James for the recording.
Wow. This is a powerful talk. I am totally riveted. I am so very... I'm blown away. Okay. My name's Ani. I'm here with you at your community radio station, KBOO. This is a super important talk, one of the most important talks I think we've aired in a little while. And you are listening to it right now because we know this is important information. And you, dear listener, need this information so that you can take right action and live an informed life. Right now, I'm asking you to support the effort and help us raise the $500 goal we have to make tonight. And you are an important part of that. Please put yourself in this picture and dial 877-500-5266. It is so important that we hear from you and that you become a member of KBOO this evening right now, or renew your membership. Just do it. It takes just a couple of moments. It is a very powerful act. You are listening to this person talk about how, you know, it's not like we can ask politely and fascism stops. We have to learn about each other's struggles. We have to keep each other informed about what has been effective. We have to combat fascism however we can, because we know once it really takes hold, it is devastating. It is murderous. It is it's bad. It's really bad, people. So please call right now. We are living in dangerous times, and you know that you really need a real source for information and news. And this is KBOO. This is what we do. 877-500-5266. We are unfettered by corporate interests. We are not controlled by the ruling class. We don't serve the billionaire class. We don't serve the ruling elite. We serve you, our community members. We are Grassroots Community Radio, and we're asking you to be one of our grassroots supporters right now. $10 a month is pretty easy for many people listening to commit to bettering and improving and strengthening your community. And right now is the best time to call 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And it's important to hear from you to let us know that you care, that you want to make the world a better place, that you are claiming the airwaves and helping to be a part of this anti-fascist movement, which we all need to be about, right? Because when fascism takes hold, it is, in fact, too late. We are certainly on the move that direction, and we need community media to keep us informed, to give us the information straight from the grassroots, from the street level view. And right now is the best time for you to call with your support at 877-500-5266. Get this Fight the Fascist Power Pack. Again, it's loaded. It's a USB drive loaded with 40 hours of KBOO programs and podcasts. It's a lot of information, as well as an internet security toolkit. And it can be yours when you ask for that as your thank you gift when you join or renew your membership to KBOO for $120. $10 a month or $120 all at once, that's up to you. But really, it is time for you to make that call. Join KBOO right now. 877-500-5266.
You are listening to a lecture by Linda and Miro titled Lessons from German Anti-Fascist Movements. We go back to Miro talking about the anti-fascist organizing in the 1980s.
These autonomous anti-fascists, they for the first time started using the old logo of Anti-Fascist Action again. They changed it. They kicked out one of the red flags because they did not want to represent the Social Democratic Party in it anymore. And I don't think that the Social Democratic Party wanted to be in it in the first place. So the wind now is coming from the right side because they thought it's the 80s now, there's no left anymore with millions of members, but the wind is coming from the right, they are, and we are defensive, basically. But they kept the rescue ring and the name. And they did it not because they were such big fans of the historic Communist Party, they were really critical of it, but because they wanted to remind the pacifist communists, like the Communist Party or the Communist Party at the time, or the VVN, we heard about, of their own militant roots, and say, hey, the Communist Party of the 20s you love so much, they were militants and you should be too. But that did not work out as good as old. But still, the logo came back. In the late 80s, these militant anti-fascist structures almost completely dissolved. There's reasons to that we want to present real quick. First of all, because they did not care to convince people and integrate new people into their structures, and when you are in a militant organization, it's really hard to do that. The older people would drop out because they got older and had jobs or no time anymore, couldn't get in trouble with the cops anymore. So this organization thinned out and lost their roots in many cities, lost their roots in communities. The second reason why it dissolved is that there were strategic disputes. So they were arguing around who is our enemy, should we fight every minor neo-Nazi skinhead group, or should we focus on those people who are really in power, like the right wing of the Conservative Party that pushes through the Nazis' agenda, or some parts of the Nazi agenda, and makes life harder for so many people, because they're so much more influential. So maybe anti-fascists argued we should try and attack them more or target them more. The third reason is, and that's the most important reason, the cops got a lot better in their 80s and started to become aware of anti-fascism and protect the fascists more and do more investigations against anti-fascists. And so the whole search and destroy approach did not work as good anymore. The fourth reason is that the fascists still grew stronger and stronger, so it was harder to keep the lid on them with a search and destroy approach. In the 1990s, in the beginning of the 90s, the Soviet Union collapsed, and with it, the Eastern German state, the Socialist Republic, the GDR, collapsed. With the Eastern German state, the whole left in Germany collapsed. The Orthodox communists, of course, because they thought that socialism will win is just the law of history, and when it was proven wrong, most people left. The anti-authoritarian left basically collapsed as well, because this notion that no other world is possible was so strong at the time that a lot of people got so frustrated and thought, why are we even doing this? Capitalism has won, we can't do anything against it. And another thing in Germany at the time was that there was a huge wave of nationalism going through the country. So everybody was proud again to be German. This was sparked by the reunification of the two German states. And in Eastern Germany, there was a huge economic crisis. So the former socialist economy fully collapsed. So, and with it came poverty and unemployment in Eastern Germany. So there was no alternative on the left, since the people of the former GDR were fed up with socialism. And neo-Nazi leaders sensed that and moved strategically into East Germany and built up structures there really successfully. This all combined left the Nazis with the feeling that their time has come. They were really motivated, and motivated Nazis means results in murder and pogroms. And so it went in the early 90s in Germany. A lot of immigrants were killed. Several leftists were killed by Nazis. In the right corner, you see a picture of a pogrom that went on for 3 nights. Several hundred neo-Nazis and thousands of neighbors assembled around a house in Rostock that was inhabited by Vietnamese workers, and they tried to burn it down and threw rocks at it, and the neighbors would applaud and everybody chanted racist songs and stuff, and the police did not step in. So there were people in the house and the fascists tried to burn it down and nobody stopped it, basically, except for 300 anti-fascists who tried to move in and disperse the crowd, which was completely mental when you think about it, because the fascists had Molotov cocktails and rocks and were way more people. Before the anti-fascists could get there, they were all arrested. So there was a lot of police presence in the area. They just did not care to step in. All these experiences left the anti-fascists in Germany with a sense of urgency and with a sense of, okay, we need to do something and we need to be effective now, and we need to learn from the mistakes of the 80s. In 1990,